Welcome to our next episode of Chosen Voices, a podcast created by Chosen Vessels, Inc., seeking to encourage, equip, and empower leaders in ministry around the globe. I'm your host, Becca Baxter, and this is Chosen Voices. Today on the podcast, we have Seth McManus. Seth works with CMF International and works to recruit, train, and send young adults on cross-cultural internships through their REACH program. He studied intercultural studies at Johnson University, Florida, and is now studying at Asbury Theological Seminary. He loves podcasting, music, movies, and spending time with friends. Here's my conversation with Seth, and I think you're really going to love it. Welcome to the show, Seth. I'm so excited to have you on today.
Thanks, Becca. I'm excited to be on today. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I think I have had more classes with you in them than without you in them at Asbury. So we've spent many of hours talking on discussion forums and some in person too.
So many discussion forums. So many. But it is, it's been fun.
It's unbelievable how long discussion forums can go on. But
gosh. You're not kidding.
So start us off today just sharing a little bit about who you are, your current life context, to get people a place to put you on the map.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Seth. I'm a Florida boy, born and raised in the panhandle of Florida. I currently live in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I live downtown in a low-income neighborhood. And I work full-time with a missions organization called CMF International that's based here in Indianapolis. I am studying at Asbury, so I'm just over halfway through my Master's of Arts in Intercultural Studies there. And I love movies, music, all kinds of stuff. And that's a little bit about me.
Awesome. So what is your current job at CMF International, and how long have you been with them?
Yeah, my current job is I work in the mobilization department. So kind of our department is responsible for from the first time someone maybe is interested in serving as a missionary long-term or for an internship to them being on the field. Like, we kind of walk through that whole process with them. And specifically, I oversee our summer internship for college students and young adults. And I've been with CMF I've been on staff for over 2 years at this point, but I was an intern with them in 2017. So I've been connected to them for a little bit longer than that. But I've been on staff for about 2 years, and it's been a crazy journey, especially with the last 6 months included. I really, really love what I get to do there and the people I get to work with. So
that's awesome. So your job truly is walking students through what you've already been through with CMF, because you did the internship and then came on staff with them.
Yep, exactly. I did it in 2017, and then 2018 was when I came on staff. So I kind of immediately went from figuring out how to do it to then helping other people figure out how to do it, and still trying to do that today. So it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. And that was you went to Nairobi, Kenya, right? Am I mistaken?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. So is that your first engagement with cross-cultural missions, or was there a time where you engaged in that beforehand?
Yeah, the first time I got to kind of see what intercultural ministry and missions was all about was a few years before that. I went to Cameroon, West Africa. And that was I was in high school at that point. So, and I grew up in a small town in Florida. So it was kind of like this huge eye opener for me just to be able to spend some time in Cameroon and make relationships there. I went with a former full-time missionary and kind of got to see things from his perspective. So went there. I went to the DR also in high school. And then when I was getting my undergrad, also in intercultural studies, I had the chance to go to Cambodia for a little bit with a nonprofit, and then also that internship in Nairobi. So yeah, I've been a few places. And then I, for work with CMF, I went to Mexico twice last year, and was supposed to go to Kenya in March, but was in the middle of a flight when the world flipped upside down and had to turn around. So been several places. Kind of my goal after finishing my master's is to pursue a full-time missionary type role. So my plan is to move overseas. Obviously, I haven't had the chance to do that yet, as I'm still kind of in the preparation phase, but definitely that's been on my heart for quite a while.
That's awesome. We had very similar experiences in March. Apparently, I had been in Romania for about 20 hours when everything kind of exploded, and so I had to get on an emergency flight home as well. So yeah, what a time.
It's not a lot of fun.
Oh, man. Did you actually land, or did you just turn around in the air to come back?
So I was responsible for a team of college students and their professor, and they were with me, and we made it to Germany, and things happened while we were flying to Germany. Then when we landed in Germany, I had about 2 hours to rebook our entire group to get back home. So yeah, I made it to Frankfurt and, you know, waved at Kenya, but did not get to actually go there this time. So yeah.
So you've been a lot of places. What is something about the global church that you think is the same everywhere?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I feel like I am, you know, I love studying the differences everywhere. But that is one of the things that, you know, as you understand the differences about another culture, you helps you understand your own culture, but then you can also see a lot of the commonalities. So I think, I think it's beautiful just the connection and unity that you can have with people, even though you're from a completely different context. And I think all of the places that I've been that I mentioned, you know, there's people there, friends there that, you know, treated me like family, even the ones where I was there for such a short time, just the hospitality that I think a lot of cultures practice a lot of times a lot better than we do here in the States. It's something that I definitely recognize and have tried to learn from and implement in my life. It's like everywhere I go, you know, people that are part of the global church have always been so, so welcoming and so kind. And that's partially a cultural thing where a lot of cultures just do that really well. But also I think there is a piece of that that comes from, you know, being a part of this united global body where you don't have a lot in common, but this core thing that you do have in common allows you to kind of start at a deeper place with people. So yeah, I just think of all the awesome people that have made an impact on me and the friends that have become like family in such a short time. So
That's awesome. What are some of the unique differences that you love?
Oh man. I mean, an obvious one that is kind of touristy is like the food. Like we just like don't season our food here. And you know, like sweet tacos in Mexico or, you know, got to have Ethiopian food while I was in Kenya. I have not been to Ethiopia yet, but even just trying that different style of food. That's one thing that's obviously a surface level thing, but still, you know, it's something that can bring people together and is a fun thing to talk about. Like I remember last year I got to visit a college campus ministry that we have in Mexico, and I was a guest for their weekly gathering. And so they asked me to stand up and introduce myself. And like one of the important get to know you questions was red salsa or green salsa, like which team are you on?
So that's awesome.
Even that can be a fun thing. But I think in, you know, maybe some deeper level of differences that I could think of. I think what I mentioned, the hospitality piece, also I love a lot of times the way that people greet each other in other cultures, especially in Mexico and a lot of Latin American cultures, just the warmth that I think is expressed, even with people who you've just met, you know, the way that people, even just, yeah, the way that you're welcoming someone, the way that you're meeting them. I think there's a tradition to a lot of those things that a handshake just doesn't feel the same anymore, you know, when, when you, the way that you greet people matters and even the phrases you use and even learning those things in a language is a lot of fun too. So.
Absolutely. Those are great. So what were some of the early misconceptions that you had about cross-cultural missions that now your thought process has shifted on? So maybe you had them when you went to Cameroon or the DR in high school, and now your perception has shifted, now working full-time for CMF.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many, Becca. Like I can't even, I think the main one that comes to mind is, so when I kind of felt, whatever you want to call it, a call to missions or kind of that was on my heart, I had no idea what that meant. I had never been out of the country. I was still in high school. And so, you know, I have this like desire for something I have no experience with. And so I think my initial motivation, if I'm being honest, probably came from kind of a hero or savior idea where I thought, oh, you know, I want to help people. And there's so many people that, you know, need so much help. And so I'm just going to do everything I can to make people's lives better. And I think You know, that's a pretty me-centric reality. I think I had, I would like to think I had good intentions, but you think, you know, when I think back about, you know, where that was coming from, it definitely was a huge misconception. And I think that was when I got to Cameroon, being around other believers there and being around a missionary who I went with, you know, that was quickly changed when I realized, oh, like these visions of grandeur of changing the world are not really realistic or healthy for anyone. So maybe thinking about things like partnership and, you know, things that are more sustainable and kind of narrowing your scope. So I remember the missionary I went to Cameroon with, he said, you know, my initial goal was to change the world. Then I wanted to change Africa. Then I wanted to change Cameroon. And now I just want to be a part of the change in this particular town, like a small town. He's like, he had to zoom in his focus and recognize I can't do all of that. And that's not even realistic. And it's not even a healthy paradigm to think that I can. So what's a small piece of, you know, change I can be a part of? So that was a big misconception. I think too, not to get super political, but I mean, this conversation is political in nature. So I think too, I make a joke when I train our interns, like sometimes a short-term missionary, maybe the two things that they're going to tell people is Jesus loves them and America is the greatest country in the world. And like, it's really funny and I use it as a joke, but like, it's sadly true. And I think I probably had some of that in me as well. Like, obviously, I'm an American, you know, I love the country that I grew up in. But I think the kind of America supremacy type mindset is really, I think if you're doing intercultural ministry and missions well, you can't hold on to that. Like, you know, you recognize the complexity in every culture and you see the ways that God is working to change other places as much as he's working to change, you know, your own home. And so I think you know, that's where my message might have been, hey, I think, you know, America is so awesome. Also, Jesus loves you. I think one of those is true. And the other one is probably a misconception that I had to unlearn and still am kind of working on unlearning. So
that's awesome. I love when you talk about this idea, because there is this greater redemption story and plan that God has for the world. And so going into a mindset of, okay, what is mine to do? And how can that look like also global engagement? So while it's, you know, investing in your local community, but also investing in authentic partnership, which is something I was going to ask you about later, but I think now's a great time to ask you too. Sure. What do you think authentic partnership in global missions looks like?
I think that's actually a really important question. I think it's one that's become more, I don't know if popular is the right word, but it's become, I think, a more important part of the conversation recently, and I think with good reason. So, you know, with CMF, we operate very heavily on partnerships. Even my internship when I went to Nairobi, I was working with an organization that was started and led by Kenyans. It was through a partnership with CMF that I got to be a part of that. And so, and even now that organization is, in a lot of ways, they've grown to be their own entity. And so now we're even looking at, as an organization, how do we continue to support them while giving them independence, which I think is actually a beautiful thing. Because usually organizations or churches split because of bad blood. But like right now we're going through a split that's actually very amicable and like actually is going to be best, I think, for both parties with that continued relationship. But I think at the end of the day, a good partnership means that everyone has an equal seat at the table. Metaphorically and physically, literally. And I think that requires the party with the inherent power and or privilege to recognize those powers and privileges and lay them down on the table, on the altar, and sacrifice them. So when I say that, I mean, you know, for a church in America to enter into a partnership with a church in Africa or Romania or part of Latin America, you know, it's easy for someone in America or someone from the West to think, oh, if we invite them to be a part of this, then it's like we're all sitting at the table equally. But really, there's a lot of roadblocks between what we in the West are able to do and the access that we have to resources and the access that we have to wealth and all these different opportunities that we just don't think twice about. And so I think it really requires to recognize, not only is everyone sitting at the table, but does everyone have a chair and how tall is the chair, you know? So not even just a conversation of reconciliation, but equity. So who has the power and how is power imbalanced? Is it being misused? How can we redistribute the power And how can we really empower the people in the situation who have been voiceless and kind of pushed out of the conversation? You know, there's so many churches, church movements, organizations that are doing incredible work that their stories have just never been told because they don't have the resources to tell their story. And so, you know, how can we in the West empower those stories that are typically voiceless? And how can we use the resources that we have and leverage them to empower people who are doing that work every day that just isn't being seen and isn't being known? So I think that's kind of like a baseline. If you're talking about partnership, you have to kind of look at the big picture and reassess what's going on before you just jump into everyone sitting around a table, because there's a lot of things that are obstacles for people to get to that table.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And when you're considering where, you know, where is the money and where is the wealth, and that could be the good thing you bring to the partnership, and you also bring with that, you bring a leverage of someone else's voice. And so those people that are serving in wherever they are, whether it's Cameroon, Kenya, Ghana, Romania, wherever, they have the experience, they know their communities, and they have the heart and the vision and the drive to celebrate and to invest in their communities. And so how can you actually have a, you know, an equal partnership without we have a tendency of running over people in the West. And so how can we actually use that, the good things of wealth, to leverage other people that might have had more obstacles coming to the table, you know? And I think that's a really important conversation in all settings, not just missions too. So that's awesome. So in your specific role, you currently live in Indianapolis, but you interact with a daily basis on with individuals from all over the world. And so you are participating in the global church right from your home. And so what's it like engaging with the global church in that way on a daily basis?
It's really a blessing. I mean, I have to pinch myself sometimes because I think back to, like, you know, the me that I mentioned going to Cameroon for the first time, and I didn't know like a single missionary. You know, I didn't grow up knowing, I grew up in a really small church. We didn't have a missions committee or budget or anything like that. And so I didn't know a single missionary. And then here I am, this kid saying, I'm going to be a missionary, had no idea what that meant. And so now, you know, every day I'm communicating with missionaries, and we work in 25 different countries across the world. So all different time zones, all different languages. And one of the things that we are kind of leaning into as an organization now is, we're having a lot of missionaries and partners and staff who are coming from the countries, you know, where we're doing ministry. So it's really cool to see missionaries go from one field to another and never even pass through the United States channel. You know, like, we have missionaries who have never even come to the United States for training or anything, because, you know, they actually got connected with the ministry in South America, and now they're going to Spain to serve, or vice versa. So I think, it's a real blessing, and it's definitely a really great reminder to continue to kind of think with an open mind, and to think beyond myself, because I am in the United States and my perspective is different, but interacting with voices from all over the world and recognizing that, you know, we exist because of these different partnerships and these relationships, I think is encouraging and humbling, and it creates a new challenge as well. You know, it's like, not everyone that is sitting around a table within our organization thinks the same about every particular issue or ministry strategy. So we really have to be, always having conversations and reevaluating different things, and recognizing that in the 25 different countries we work, there's so many different contexts within that. And so to make these giant universal rules or policies or strategies that everyone has to abide by, a lot of times can cause more harm than good, because it just isn't, it's not actually reflective of the context that we're working in. So I think it reminds me to continue to stay innovative and kind of always be adaptable in each situation, because, you know, the team I'm sending interns to in Mexico City is very different than the one I'm sending interns to in Germany. You know, they're just totally different. The missionaries there are different. The staff are different. Our partners there are different. And so it's the same program that I'm overseeing, and you know, similar students, but the way that the experiences they're having are very different. So just recognizing that diversity, appreciating it, but also, you know, being ready to face the challenges that comes with that. You know, everybody talks about diversity and how great it is, and it is, but it's kind of become it's become kind of a cheap word that we just throw around. Mm-hmm. But I think people fail to realize like diversity, true diversity takes a lot of work and a lot of mm-hmm. effort, and it's always worth it, but it definitely requires way more attention to detail. So, I think overall it's surreal. Like I said, to wake up and email someone, you know, before 10 a.m., I've talked to people in 5 different countries. Like, that is ridiculous to me. still can't wrap my head around that, but it's definitely a real blessing.
So just as you're talking, it sounds like CMF has kind of, they've taken the step of going to from the old school way of the West to the rest, now to finally like from all people to all people. And I think that's a really important step that missions has to make. And like you're saying, recognizing the global movement of missions. And so that's really neat. You talked about sending interns. So I want to ask you about this. How do you ready your interns to go on the field?
Yeah, so we do a week of training intentionally before, right before all of our intern teams go out. So like last summer, 2019, you know, we had about 32 that went out across, and I think there's about 9 or 10 teams of interns that we sent. So, you know, they apply in the fall, and then they kind of start the process with us in January. So we coach them through support raising. We have them do certain things before they come. One of the things we ask them to do is like visit a church or worship service of an ethnicity that's different than their own. So, you know, if it's a Caucasian student, we would ask them to, you know, visit a Congolese church that's near them, or visit a Korean church that's near them. Just encouraging them to start that process. We have them read a couple books and resources just so their minds are starting to get there. And then for that week, we're really intentional throughout that week to kind of give a crash course on all things. And I try to design it so that someone like me or you who has, you know, some experience and has studied this in an academic way could still get something out of it. But then someone who's maybe a nursing student and has never been overseas before is still going to be able to get, you know, get the basic understandings and cultural competence that's necessary. So we try to make it interactive and include games. We try to throw in, you know, videos, just different ways of learning, interacting with other people. And that way it's kind of engaging every part of somebody's learning facilities, while also, you know, reinforcing in them kind of the core things about spirituality, culture, you know, working on a team, some of those things that we try to foresee what kind of problems and challenges they're going to face during their internship. We try to help give them the tools to be ready for that. And that's not foolproof, but you know, we try our best, and it's a really fun process to kind of work through.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so these interns are primarily college age students. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So they are Gen Z, young adult college students. So what are their dynamics like when they get on the field and they are serving with long-term missionaries that may have been there for a long time, or just what do those relationships look like?
Yeah, they're interesting, and it's really, really cool to kind of watch. But you know, I think that the, you know, a new generation comes with new challenges, and so, you know, we have to be way more aware of like technology and how is that impacting an intern's experience or their interaction with people positively or negatively. You know, technology is a great resource. It allows them to remain connected back home. But then, you know, when is that too much, and when do they need to kind of unplug and focus on what's going on? And we really give a lot of the trust to our missionaries that are overseeing them. So I try to do as much care before and after. And then I check in with people while they're there, but the missionaries really get to have that direct mentorship relationship because they are the ones with the experience. And I think what we found in both like long-term missionaries and interns who are younger, you know, there's different skill sets, that people are bringing to the table. So I think it's helpful to recognize, you know, what strengths and weaknesses are there. So someone who's, you know, maybe 23 and fresh out of college, sometimes there can be some basic things, or what to an older seasoned missionary might seem like a basic thing that maybe they're just not experienced in, or their, you know, parents never taught them, or they lived in a roommate situation where they never had to, you know, do laundry, or, you know, simple things mm-hmm. that people take for granted. But then at the same time, you know, that 23-year-old college student fresh out of college, a lot of them have studied media and communications, and they're going to communicate and like empower churches to communicate way better than those seasoned missionaries can. So I think it's like, you know, we're still working through that process of, you know, how do we incentivize our more seasoned missionaries and encourage them to recognize their place as a mentor and as a person with experience. And also, I mean, I always tell our interns, like, ask questions, ask for help. You know, I think that's where we can get in a lot of danger, is when the less experienced person tries to do it on their own, or tries to go rogue or go solo with certain things, or they just make assumptions, right? Like, that's really dangerous in a cross-cultural context. So always encouraging them to lean on the experience, but also to give and recognize, you know, the skills that they can have that can bless the longer term people who are there. And, you know, we try to remind them too, like, and that's one of the biggest lessons I got from when I was an intern with the program is, you know, someone's picking up the pieces when you leave, and someone mm-hmm. was putting them together before you got there, especially if you're an intern, mm-hmm. even if you're like a year or less, you know, like, there's a lot of work that goes into the before and after, and you don't see the whole picture. So you really have to trust those who have been there for a long time. Both the, you know, like in my context, it's like the Kenyan staff, the Kenyan pastor that I was working with, like I had to trust him and his expertise because he had that expertise. And then the missionaries there too, you know, leaning on them and trusting them and understanding that they see a more nuanced picture than I will ever see in the 2 or 3 months that I'm there. So kind of just recognizing those dynamics and trying to see, you know, like that idea of the body of Christ, that, you know, each person is playing a different role, is like, what can an intern do in 2 months or a semester? Like, what is the scope that, what are the expectations we're setting for them? You know, I always tell our interns, it's like, there's no way that, maybe not no way, I would never say that, but the odds of you, you know, planting a church while you're there for a summer are so small. If you're going into the summer expecting that, like, you need to reevaluate a little bit, you know? So yeah, recognize that relationships are kind of the most important thing, and realistic expectations, and even minimizing expectations in general, I think is really helpful. Like, we all have expectations. So recognizing that we have them and trying to really trim them down as much as possible so that we have an open mind. And I think that allows interns and the younger, you know, Gen Z, young millennials to work better with those who are seasoned and have that experience, is to recognize and respect that. But also realize, hey, I can help. I can make a difference here. So let me find my lane, you know, like mm-hmm. stay in the lane that you can do in a summer or a semester, and don't try to overshoot anything.
That's great. What does their debrief process look like when they come home?
Yeah, it's a couple days. And so whereas the week of training is really us as the staff and the people who have done the internship or have served as long-term missionaries, you know, really connecting with and giving to the interns, the debrief is much more led by the interns. So we just kind of start that process of them processing what they've experienced and recognizing, I have each team do a field report and then a story time. So what those two things are is, a field report is kind of the more serious thing. Like, what are some of the biggest lessons that God taught me? What are some of the most important relationships that I'm taking away from this summer? Kind of the deeper things that, you know, as you can start to process what that looked like. And then story time is like, what are the ridiculous, funny things that happened? Like, what, you know, how did I mess up the language? You know, how, you know, what are some things that, and I think I talk to them about it, like, and maybe this is a flawed analogy, but it's like a Batman utility belt, you know, like he has all his tools ready to go. And I feel like when people are coming back, a lot of times you get in the car with your parents or you see friends from school and it's, yeah, how was your summer? And you're like, it's like, I mean, I remember feeling it. It's like a deer in the headlights. You're like, mm-hmm. how do I encapsulate all of these massive, you know, heart changes and things that I'm still processing? How do you do that in two sentences before you hop in the car with your friend? You know, like, you can't. So I think having these stories prepared, and we always make sure to let them know that the debrief process is not a 2-day thing. It's a lifelong thing, you know, like it takes your whole life to change, right? So people say, oh, I went to this place, it was a life-changing experience. And yeah, it can be, but I think that's an unnecessary expectation we put on these types of experiences. Like, life to change a life takes a life, you know, mm-hmm. like it takes an entire life to recognize the ways you've been changed. Like I'm still being changed by my experience in Nairobi, 3-4 years ago. And I'm still being changed by my relationships with people in Mexico and people in Cambodia. And so were they life-changing experiences? Absolutely. But that's not something that just, it's not like I went there and now my life has changed and I come back a different person. It's a really long process. And so we even encourage, you know, counseling. Like that's something a lot of people need when they come back, even from such a short, you know, I call it like a longer term, short term experience, 2 months, a semester, like those are smaller timeframes, but, you know, a lot can happen in that amount of time. So encouraging people to reach out for help and recognize that this is a long process and it doesn't happen overnight. And you can't just, I think the dangers are you can compartmentalize it and kind of put it off to the side and not worry about it, which can be really damaging psychologically mm-hmm. and emotionally. Or if you fail to process it, it can kind of become your everything and you don't know, you don't have a healthy way to like express it. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, for better or for worse, we've all met those people who kind of, it's the only thing they can talk about. And, you know, they, and that situation can be, it's not always bad, but can be a little bit of a challenge where I reckon to me that reads that you haven't had a healthy outlet to process these life-changing experiences. And so you're just kind of vomiting them wherever you can, you know? Mm-hmm. And so how can we have a more realistic long-term expectation to like gradually process this? And yeah, for me, I mean, I actually ended up getting counseling way after I returned and processed some of those things way after the fact, you know? And when I talk to interns, I'm like, man, I wish I wouldn't have waited. You know, I think mm-hmm. you should do that. Even if it's not, I mean, obviously clinical counseling is great if you can afford it and if it's available to you with insurance or whatever, but you know, just having an outlet to be able to process things and recognizing that maybe you need to slow down and do those things. I mean, a lot of the students come back and then it's, you know, I'm an RA at college and mm-hmm. I'm involved in this sorority or whatever. And it just like, you get so busy. And then, you know, one of my former professors used the example one time, one of her students just started, it was like the sweetest, most mild mannered student just started beating the heck out of a toaster in the dining hall. And it was like, whoa, you know, something's not right here. And this person who's super mild mannered just didn't have a healthy outlet to process this whole experience that she had had. And mm-hmm. so the target became the toaster, or the target becomes your parents or your friends. And so it's, you know, I think the debrief thing is very important. And, you know, once again, recognizing the expectations and the scope of what you're able to do initially, but then setting up some of those longer term habits. And that goes for, you know, I think any cross-cultural experience, like, and for me, I've always struggled with returning way more than going. Like mm-hmm. I usually, in the shorter term experiences that I've had, you know, I usually adjust pretty well to the situation, but then coming back is just like, whoa, you know, it's like yeah. waking up in a different universe. So
I feel that way as well. And I have done counseling several times after coming back, and it is either whether that was clinical counseling or pastoral counseling, it's looked different in different seasons, but I've been very grateful to have someone to process those things with, because you're holding grief and joy and excitement and pain and trauma all in one basket. And so it's yeah. hard to separate those out without a sounding board that maybe isn't your best friend that would like to talk to you about other things too, you know? So, finding that healthy outlet, whether that was a great experience, like you were saying, or whether there are just some things you really need to unpack that were really hard. So that's great. I totally agree with that.
And that's one thing that we also try to add to our processes. And I have to be conscious of this because I'm an external processor. If listeners can't already tell that, I talk a mile a minute and I'm processing things as I go. But I know a lot of people are not, you know, they need that time to really process things internally before they're ready to. So we try to find a good balance of both of those things. And I don't know if mm-hmm. I've, you know, necessarily figured that out yet, but I think recognizing that people go at different speeds and and that's one thing I try to do when I have friends that do similar things, is I try to call them or sit down with them and just try to really listen. Like, I think that's something I recognize that I didn't have that, and I wasn't able to communicate the need for that, because I just didn't understand what was going on. So now when I have friends do that type of thing, I generally try to let them just talk, you know, and like, there's a lot of times there's only a few places where you're able to do that. And sometimes it's only counseling that you do have that outlet. So just trying to find those opportunities, I think, is really important for people when it feels like your family and friends are like slighting you, or they don't actually care when they maybe cut you off after a few minutes, but really they just don't understand. And so, you know, having a healthy outlet and not freaking out on your close friends and family who do care about you, but just sometimes lack the understanding for what it is that you're doing and what, you know, what it is you're a part of there.
Mm, absolutely. So I'm gonna ask you a very broad question.
Okay.
What is your favorite thing about your job?
Ooh, man. Okay, I have a very shallow answer and then a deeper answer. Is that okay?
Go for it.
So me and the director of our department, we both are total goofballs, and we love swag and merch of any kind. So we will put CMF logos on anything, and we're always like, our communications department has to deal with so much from us, because we're always like, what if we did a button? What if we did a sticker? What if we did this kind of hat? And so I love showing up to a campus and just like swag drop. We call it a swag drop. It's crazy. But, you know, just giving people shirts, coming up with new designs. Like, I am not a designer, but I love, you know, design and how things look. And so, yeah, I love being able to kind of have influence on what types of things we're giving out. Stickers, like all of my coworkers are exhausted of hearing about stickers or what new sticker we have. But, you know, it's a fun thing to give out, especially with college students. You know, it's a great way to remind them of things and, you know, to, you know, just give them a fun thing that starts a conversation, I think, is really helpful. Like, so this past summer, you know, we weren't able to send any interns. So I made them all a sticker that says, I was supposed to do REACH, which is the name of our internship. I was supposed to do REACH 2020. But all I got was this lousy sticker. And like, just laughing at the situation, like having humor about, hey, this really sucked. Like, this was just a really crappy summer, and nothing that we had planned worked out. So we can laugh about that. But also, here's a sticker to remind you, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love swag. That's my shallow answer. My deeper answer, my more professional answer would be, I love just seeing the growth that people get to experience. So like, meeting somebody on a campus for the first time or having a Skype call with someone and hearing some of their anxieties or things they're worried about or things they're not sure of. And then watching them go through that whole process and then hearing them come back with the idea of, you know, hey, I think I actually want to do this longer term, or, hey, I actually want to be involved in this type of ministry from now on. Like, there's nothing that is better than that. You know, meeting someone who says, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm so confused about these different things, and I just don't know what God wants me to do. And I just say, okay, slow down. What if you just did a summer? Like, what if we just start there, right? Mm. And one step at a time. And then, you know, when they come back, seeing the ways that they've grown, seeing the ways that, or even seeing the lessons that we're trying to teach during that week of training that maybe aren't quite sticking yet, you know, because mm-hmm. it's just hard until you've experienced it. And then having people come back and tell me verbatim things I told them before they left. It's like, you remember we talked about that, right? And they're like, no, I don't. I'm like, yeah, okay. But, okay. You know, just that's a fun experience to see people really get it and like really latch on to what God is doing and to have that renewed perspective and renewed love for, yeah, other cultures, for the global church, for, you know, justice and these different conversations, and to see then how people come back and one can then turn that into a longer term missions context. But then for others, it's more of a springboard to, you know, speaking into those conversations here in the States and allowing what, you know, someone experienced in Germany or Spain or Kenya, you know, then informing the person that they are as a student, as a friend, as a, you know, all these things when they come back. So I think that's probably the best part, to get to see the process and be a part of it.
It's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on today. Is there anything else that we did not cover that you'd like to cover?
I don't know. I mean, I could talk for hours about random things, but
I know we've been on many a discussion forums and class conversations.
You've seen how I go beyond the word limit. Like, what's up with that? Like,
it's great. I love it. All for it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, I would encourage anyone, obviously, you know, find a nonprofit like CMF, like Chosen Vessels that you, you know, you can agree with and you see the ministry and you have the same heart and get involved, you know, see where you can serve, see where you can intern. I've gotten connected with a organization here in Indianapolis that works with refugees and immigrants. And I realized that as a Christian, for me to do all this work overseas and then to like not recognize how people overseas are coming to me to be my neighbor is pretty hypocritical. And so kind of challenged me to get involved with that. So, you know, find causes that you care about, find ways that you can make a difference. It doesn't have to be overseas. It definitely can be, and definitely for a lot of people should be. But yeah, find things that you agree with and find nonprofits that are doing good work and just come alongside them and empower them through giving, through encouragement, through volunteering, interning, and you know, who knows what can happen if you take that first step.
That's great. That is a good word. The global church is in your backyard right now. So people you can go across the street and find somebody to invest in. So that's a good word. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much, Seth. This was so fun to chat actually on a podcast in person. And so thank you for joining me today and giving us so much wisdom. I particularly enjoyed your conversation about partnership and what that looks like and would encourage people to go back and take notes on it too. So
awesome. Yeah, thanks, Becca. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a blast.
We hope you enjoyed this episode with Seth. To learn more about Chosen Vessels, feel free to connect with us at chosenvesselsonline.org to find out more about who we serve and the resources that we offer. If you have a second and wouldn't mind rating and reviewing the show really quickly, it really helps us out. See you next week.